Bravo, Gemini, Sun, Moon, and Rising. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so, with emphasis on or so, here with your Gemini birthday reading for 2015-2016. This is mainly a solar return style reading where I'm going to work from one chart, but also will be continuing into the future with a diversity of transits, particularly Saturn, probably the most important transit you have that is developing now and will extend a bit more than 2 years into the future. First, a bit of overview. The chart that I'm working with today is one of the most interesting Mercury charts I've seen in a long time, perhaps ever. I always pick an interesting day when possible, at least, to do the birthday reading, a day that somehow exemplifies the charts that are involved, the astrology that's involved, and sometimes that's a new moon or a full moon, but today I'm working during the conjunction of the Sun and Mercury, and that is like a new moon, only instead of the moon being involved, Mercury is involved, and this particular type of event happens 3 times a year. Where Mercury passes between the Earth and the Sun, so that's a new moon, basically, only it's new Mercury. And when this happens, Mercury is retrograde. It has to be retrograde to pass between the Earth and the Sun, and this aspect is happening right now. It's exact a little bit before 1 o'clock Eastern Time, so it's currently building and will be exact in about 2.5 hours. And in addition to that, that's interesting on its own, but what we have is the Sun and Mercury conjunct two really interesting minor planets. Planets that are from the outer solar system, not asteroids, but slow-moving planets. And one of them is called Asbolus, and one is called Algira. Now, I've worked more with Asbolus. I've worked with it almost since the beginning. It was discovered in 95, I believe. And what we get with this is some real determination. Asbolus is the survivor of the zodiac. It is the people with a prominent Asbolus in their charts who always come in, and it's as if they've spent their lives dusting themselves off and they keep on going. There seems to be nothing in practical terms, family, social, reality, health, anything that can stop them, they just keep on going. So I have developed great respect for Asbolus, and given my love of critters and things that live, there's an extra bit about Asbolus. Its name means carbon dust. It's from Greek. And when you think of carbon dust, you think of everything that lives. The one thing that all life on Earth has in common is that it is carbon-based. And so I think of Asbolus as being the thing that represents what we all have in common. And there's a number of things we all have in common, especially as humans, but really in almost all critters I've met, it's a similar thing, which is first of all, the need to survive, the desire to survive. That which lives wants to keep living. And in addition, the need for love and the need for companionship and for purpose. And a lot of our reading today is going to talk about purpose and where purpose intersects with identity. Just an overview of the way I'm organizing this. I don't really plan these readings out. I do the charts carefully and get some basic ideas together, and then I let it roll. I organize the astrology in two sections. Usually I run 30 to 40 minutes in each one of those sections. I'll do both of those today in all probability, and then we'll wait overnight and do what I call astrology, afterthoughts, and tarot. So I begin the tarot section with astrology afterthoughts, which are just follow-up thoughts that I have on the astrology that I've covered, maybe some things that I omitted, and then I do the tarot reading. And the tarot reading in particular is, I consider, an essential piece because it provides some verification for what I have talked about in the astrology section. It's kind of a work checking device. It's a reading as well. It's fun, and it also provides a way to get a second opinion from a divinatory tool. And we're all seeking second opinions all the time, reading other horoscopes and so forth. And I like to structure that in to the work that I do for others to have some method of verification. So that's the, you might think of that as the structural purpose of the tarot reading. But it's great to have that other voice to shift out of the logic of astrology and into the more gentle, easier to kind of flow with logic of pictures, which is what tarot is about, a story told in pictures. But let's tell the story in your astrology right now. At a first glance, looking at the charts for Gemini, what we would see is, looking only at conventional planets, we would see retrograde Mercury conjunct the Sun and Mars in your sign. And what this combination of factors talks about is Mars is the drive forward. Mars wants to move the story along. You might think of it as the psychic biofuel. Without Mars, nothing gets done. Mars often gets a bad rap as the god of war, but the thing is that if you take that impulse to conquer and you kind of refine it homeopathically, you get the thing that motivates us. And we all know how important motivation is. When you've got motivation, it seems like you can do anything that you want. When you lack motivation, it seems like everything is impossible. And even easy things are very difficult where there is not sufficient or any motivation. And so with Mars, one thing we can say for sure is that you are driven right now. You are driven to succeed. You are driven to become. There is likely to be very high sex energy in your life, and you're not wanting to mince your words about desire or your feelings or your thoughts. And this lends itself to a distinct honesty about who you are and what you want and how intimately those two things are connected. And it might also lead you to be aggressive and perhaps even less concerned about being polite and diplomatic. Probably the most cautionary thing that I could say about Mars in your sign, particularly Gemini, particularly as I'm about to mention square Neptune, is that it is going to be helpful if you are able to give yourself cool-off periods when you get hot-headed, and that you also contemplate the effects and the considerable power of your words, because Mars in Gemini infuses Mars, this hot, assertive, energetic kind of core engine of the personality, with the distinctly beautiful Gemini ability to put things together in words. And it's worth mentioning that, you know, even an illiterate, unarticulate Gemini is going to sound like a poet compared to a lot of other people. And that includes being funnier than almost anyone. There are a couple of signs that confer sense of humor, and I think that Gemini is an essential ingredient, and it would be productive to keep laughing. For many different reasons, but if you're pissed off, go to the Onion website and work it out, or do something funny, say something funny, work on some project that's designed to entertain in some way, and give yourself a non-toxic, non-aggressive way to burn off that physical energy. And by the way, one of them might be physical activity, but the thing that you want to watch out for is to make sure that your physical activity is not of the especially dangerous variety, or if it is, to take care. If you're in the kickboxing gym, you know, be conscious and be careful. That Mars in Gemini is going to give you more mojo than you think, and that's on the physical level as well as the psychic, and that includes what you communicate to other people. Now, while Mars is driving you forward, while Mars is pushing you and leading you to push the world and want movement and action and progress, Mercury is retrograde, and it will be through most of the term the Sun is in Gemini. Even for the last 10 days between the 11th and the 21st, when Mercury stationed direct, but the Sun is still in Gemini, Mercury is still going to be occupying the degrees where it was retrograde. So this retrograde influences every single person, Mercury, Sun, Moon, or Rising. And the retrograde's main feature is, first of all, an inward reflective quality. There is an asking. Mercury retrograde is an inquiry. It is asking you who you are, what you feel, and what you really want. And so while Mars is telling one side of the story, being in your sign, something that you're likely to be closely identified with, Mercury is speaking a bit more softly with an inward focus, not an outward focus, an introspective focus. And it is asking you questions like, is this true? What do you want? Are you sure you are who you are? Is there anything that you've forgotten? Is there something that you need? Is there something that you want to say to yourself, to admit to yourself? And Mercury, too, is square Neptune. That's in Pisces. We're going to come to that. But just to bring that into the storyline for a second, Mercury's square to Neptune is cautionary against denial. It's cautionary against forgetting, omitting, not noticing. So therefore, it is saying, remember, include, notice, remember, remember. Prompt yourself. Now, what makes this conjunction, and we're recording under a conjunction, and Mars is a little bit out from that conjunction, but it's very close. But the real gem of a conjunction here is Sun plus Mercury plus Aspolus, this survivor, this thing that all life has in common, plus a point called Algira, which I have never mentioned before. I've been watching this over the years and investigated it a number of times, and I see it pop up in charts, and now, today, it's undeniable because it is in a one-degree conjunction, the closest kind of conjunction with the Sun and Mercury and Aspolus. Algira is a very exciting idea brought into astrology. It is the king of the aboriginal gods. So it is the great god of the Australian aboriginal people, creator god, bestowed with all kinds of shape-shifting powers and the ability to walk between the dream world and the waking world. And so when you think of anything that sounds like it is out of the mythology of shamanic power, of shamanic mainly meaning the ability to walk with one foot in each world, in the world of the dead, in the world of the living, in the world of dreams and spirits, and in the world of the supposedly waking, that ability to bridge those realities is the essence of what is commonly called, and often mistakenly called, shamanism. And as you pursue what looks to me like a profound, even amazing search for who you are, remember that who you are is not so tangible. that if there's ever one mistake made on a quest for self, a search for self, it is the expectation that there will be some tangible result of that search, where you will find it like finding a lost ring. Ah, I've got it. The ring is back, and that's who I am. Algira is saying there are many worlds, there are many possibilities, and you have a different incarnation in each one of those different worlds. For example, you appear many different ways in your dreams. You manifest many different ways as you encounter waking people on Earth. There's this interesting thing where have you ever had that happen where you tell, someone says, how you doing? You tell one person one thing, and then someone says, how you doing? You tell the next person, could be 5 minutes later, a slightly or greatly different version of that. How are you feeling? You're feeling one way to one person, feeling another way to another person. It may be that your energies blend differently. It may be that you feel like you are able to be more open with certain people and not with others. It may be that you are triggered to feel a certain way around someone, and one person reminds you how good you feel, and one person reminds you how shitty you feel. But the point is here that there are many possibilities for who you are and how you manifest. And Algira is reminding you of that. That you are, in a sense, a shapeshifter. And Gemini is famous for its dualism. And I've been researching this concept of dualism and trying to see how far back the idea goes. And the Greeks seem to be among the originators of the concept of dualism. And I wouldn't go so far as to say they are the originators, but certainly they, from a very, very early time, and we don't know how far back these zodiac myths go, because the zodiac, the myths surrounding the signs of the zodiac themselves seem to be the oldest relics that we have. But the twins are a distinctly vital myth in human consciousness, and it's worth repeating that the story of the zodiac begins with a ram and continues with a bull or a cow. And finally, 2 months in to the story of the zodiac, we get our first look at a person. But when we see one person, there are two. That is hilarious. And it is illustrative of our perception of ourselves. Humans definitely want to be together, but we definitely very often feel bifurcated. One of the ways the Greeks reconciled this was with the story of Castor and Pollux, which I've learned recently is an add-on to Gemini, that it was originally a male and female twin, according to Rob Hand in a conversation that I had with him. And the Castor and Pollux myth is the story of the mortal and the immortal souls. The interesting thing is that in Greek antique art, the old stuff, they can't tell them apart. They don't know which twin is Castor and which twin is Pollux. Adding to the irony, Greek mythology is loaded with that, and adding to the information for the quest, which says, well, actually, you think you have a soul and a personality, or maybe a spirit or a higher self or a higher power and an ego and, self-made identity construct. But there's a reminder there that you do not necessarily know which of them is which, and not to take for granted which of them is which. And if you're going to say anything is kind of bottom line, bottom line is we change, we shift, we morph. And as a Gemini born on the mutable cross, you know that you embody this quality of being able to morph, to alter or choose or blend or mix and match. And Algira there in this conjunction is saying, bring that up to the forefront of your thoughts. Remember how essential it is to who you are and what a person is. And remember that you do have this ability to shapeshift. You have the ability to present yourself in vastly different ways, depending upon what situation that you present yourself in. And if among those possibilities you are looking for the one that is true, you're likely to get pretty confused, because it would seem that there is no one that is true. But if you are able to step back and observe the observer who is doing this observing, then you might have a sense of the consciousness that is orchestrating or providing the energy source for the whole quest that you are on. But it would certainly appear that you are on a quest. It is glaring out of these charts. And the two really interesting features are observable in this quest. Let's take a moment and use a little bit of astrological theory here. It's easy, so I'm not going to leave you in the dust on this. When we say Gemini, what we're really saying is all of the signs that align with Gemini on a 90-degree axis. That means that when we say Gemini, we really also mean Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. Now, you probably weren't told this, and I doubt that it's in the only astrology book you'll ever need, but it is one of the foundations of astrology, whether ancient or modern, and that the crosses of the heavens make a difference, and they make such a difference that all of the mutable signs are extensions of your sign. So you live on the mutable cross, and you are therefore influenced by everything else that is happening on the mutable cross. And it turns out that there is a lot happening on the mutable cross. In fact, it's does not necessarily make headlines in the astrology world, the events of Gemini, Virgo, Sag, and Pisces have been some of the most interesting over the past 10 or 15 years, and there's always something interesting going on. And it happens that more lately, the emphasis has shifted from what was dominantly a show stolen by Sagittarius now to one that is influenced by mainly Gemini and Pisces. And the reason this is so meaningful to you is that when we look at that mutable cross, there are two of the arms of the cross that are especially influential in terms of your how you actually animate your life. And they are the first house, Gemini, the house you live in, the person that you are, the identity that you have, and the 10th house, what in astrology would also be called the midheaven, the 10th place from the beginning point. And the 10th house is where you actually seek action in the world. It is where you define yourself by the work that you do. It is where you will find either your profession, or if you are so fortunate, your vocation, your true calling, not just the thing you do, not the career you're supposed to have, not the one that was supposed to make money, but the true calling that you have. And you have Pisces on the 10th house. It's one of the most interesting signs to have on the 10th house, because the 10th house is so worldly. It is so involved in the daily activities, be they business or corporate or government, or involving reputation, involving actual actions that are taken, right? The 10th house is not a theoretical house. The 10th house is a house where you do things, where you become things, where you project your energy into the culture, where you take charge of something, something large, something small. It could be a company, it could be a country, it could be a mission of some kind. But to have Pisces on this house is, it would be contradictory, except for the fact, because Pisces is so laid back. Pisces is the sign of dreaming, and it is the sign of music and creativity. We have really nothing that is soft and absorbent and empathetic without Pisces. And so when you combine that quality of achievement, leadership, rulership, power, reputation, authority of the 10th house with this mellow, peace-loving, laid-back, tequila-sipping, you know, take a bong hit and put on Pink Floyd, you get a very interesting result. And it would be contradictory were the real achievements in this world not involving vision. So anything that really is made in this world, that is beautiful in this world, that that stands out for its ability to serve, to help, to entertain, to heal, is going to have some Piscean vision to it. Things that lack Piscean vision are just boring. And they may be utilitarian, they may be a lot of things, but what they lack is an aesthetic. I mean, even when you see corporate branding, very 10th house thing, and the corporate branding is just beautiful, right? Even if you don't like corporate branding, we've all seen beautiful corporate branding. You might not agree with the product. You might think it's completely ridiculous. You might think it's bad for the environment, and all that could be completely true. But that touch of imagination is what gives it its power. And with Pisces on your 10th house, the thing that you must know about yourself is that when you seek to achieve, you are reaching for Pisces. You are reaching for something that is visionary and soft and beautiful and intangible. And you then become the person who gives that shape and form and who brings that vision into what you're doing, who brings what you're doing into that vision. This sets up a lifetime scenario where basically the equation as I see it is that to find fulfilling work and a fulfilling sense of mission that you really embrace and love as an authentic mission for you means that that Pisces quality has to dominate what you're doing. There has to be that element of service, of empathy, of beauty, of really the touch of genuine art. Pisces is a little bit unworldly. Pisces is actually a lot unworldly. And you are given to bring that unworldly quality into all of the things that you do that to other people would seem just like normal activities. And this is a special calling. This means that many of the normal things that exist in the world, the things people would normally do to make money, for example, they are not going to work for you because they lack that sense of empathy and beauty. And so there's a reminder, but the reminder is coming through right now and for the foreseeable future in many other ways because there are planets in Pisces. There are slow, powerful planets in Pisces. From a standpoint of modern astrology, the thing that everyone knows about is Neptune in Pisces. The modern ruler of Pisces has returned to Pisces for the first time since it was discovered in the 19th century, and Neptune is there, and Neptune is on top of your chart. And this is redoubling that message that there must be vision, there must be that touch of authentic art for what you do to be fulfilling and to have its meaning. And it's as if Neptune is refreshing the water of Pisces. It is very possibly giving you a kind of the desire for at least a renaissance in the work that you do and your sense of mission. You may feel like it is now time to really accomplish those great things that you have thought of doing and to realize you've reached the point where you had said, well, if I ever get a chance to do this, I'm going to do this particular thing. And the chance now is as good as it ever was or will be, and the difference is that it is now, that Neptune is in your 10th house now. It's going to be there for a little while, that is true, but the transit is relatively young, and I believe that it's best to catch these things when they are as new as possible, when they are as young as possible, and when you can have time to work with it and give yourself time to get acclimated. But there are more things in Pisces right now which are escalating the energy, ramping up this sense of mission and sense of calling. Two of them are centaur planets. One is Nessus, one is Chiron. And a third factor is called Borysesi. Let's take those one at a time, and I can sum them up pretty good. Centaur planets are always about making contact with your inherent humanity. This is the purpose, the plight, the meaning, the necessity, the beauty of the centaurs, those creatures who are half man, half horse. Two of them are in Pisces, and two of the most important ones, the first one ever discovered, and the third one, Nessus, which is one that handles much of the shadowy quality of human nature. And the reminder of these two centaurs is that the work you do at this point must keep you in contact with your humanity and that of other people. That there is a profound degree of suffering in the world, and you're being reminded of that in the form of a reminder of the need for healing and the need for embracing humanity for its humanity, and not just assuming, as much of the world is doing, that it's just perfectly fine if we all basically learn how to be who we are from robots. You might think, come on. You said a lot of things in your career that have been ridiculous, Mr. Coppolino, but robots, really? Well, let me tell you. We become like what we use. We become like the media that we imbibe, and we are all strung together right now by an enormous robot called the Internet that has as its main pulse Google, and that much of what we do, think, want, illustrate, communicate, look at, listen to, read, is filtered through the robot, including my voice right now. The main difference is I'm fully conscious of what I'm doing, and I am therefore getting a little bypass and able to relate this idea to you. Mercury, in its kind of divine grace, will adapt very well to the robot. It's perfectly happy to have things be in an electrically generated illusion. But the presence of the centaurs and the presence of Pisces and the presence of Neptune are all saying you must remain in contact with the inherent humanity that you are and that the people around you are. And that, so there is no way that you could, for example, satisfy yourself by going to work for the robot or by working in a way that treats anyone as less than human. And this includes remembering your own humanity, which you'll inevitably be reminded of. Pisces is the sign that gets us all down to our basic critterness. The basic warmth needs that we have and the needs for empathy and for love. And what you may be recognizing in the midst of the callings that you are feeling, and you are feeling them, and this has been going on for a while. This probably goes back to somewhere around 2010 or 2009, where you were being summoned to some greater sense of mission and sense of purpose. That as you reach for your humanity, as you strive to become human, you encounter much that is not human. And that can be very difficult. It can be painful. It can throw stumbling blocks and challenges in the way. It can make you feel invisible. It can lead you to feel like what you're doing is absolutely pointless or hopeless. None of the above are true. You're not invisible. It's not pointless, and it's not hopeless. And you are indeed human, and you are correct to think that you must remain in contact with your humanity and those that of everyone else in order to have any semblance of a life. And so when we look at this identity quest that you are on, signified by Mercury retrograde in your sign, signified by Mars driving a passionate movement forward, the burning need to be and to become, Mars in your sign, a brilliant thing to have. The reminder underneath that, the thing that you are seeking with that Mercury retrograde, is the understanding that you are human. And this may seem so blatantly obvious, like, yeah, I'm human, sure. Except that when we start to catalog the influences going back to the very earliest times in our lives, particularly the way we are born, those of us who are not born in the millennial era when midwives and home births began making a comeback were mostly all born in operating rooms, under bright lights, with doctors wearing masks, with forceps and scalpels and anesthesia. It is not pleasant in these birthing rooms where they're doing medical births. There's too damn many people in those places. I was in a birthing room just this past Wednesday, and the birthing mother was struggling. They gave her a C-section. She was struggling so much. The labor went on for 12 hours. And I'm thinking, well, if I was the midwife, the first thing I would do is kick the bunch of you out of this place. And the second thing I would do is fill a tub with warm water. So when you think of all the influences that are trying to get us to not be human, you would be appalled. And when you remember that you are under the profound influence of Pisces right now, the pool of water, the primordial ocean, but also the essential creative spirit of what a person is, the thing that motivates music, the thing that makes people want to get out pastels and smudge them all over the page and make some new color that's never existed before. Ah, that is Pisces. That is the spawning ground. That is the thing that you are seeking as you make this retrograde journey, treading back as far back as you can go into, let's say, the headwaters of Gemini, but also at the same time reaching for the headwaters of Pisces, reaching for the place where that river of night originates. What you are seeking is that essential spiritual flow, and to allow that water to inform you of who you are and where you are and when you are here now, what that's about now, and ultimately what the purpose of that is. And the purpose would seem to be that in whatever you choose to do, whatever work you have chosen for yourself, or whatever desire that you have to do to serve, that remembering you are a conduit for the flow of the river of night. You are a conduit for that creative energy. You are the vessel through which those colors and that music flows. And you can apply this to any kind of a calling, to any particular species of vocation, to any particular quest that you might be on. The thing to do is remember to do that. But I would propose here that actually you are at a time in your life where you are ready to choose a special quest, where you are ready to embrace something you've long wanted to do, that you have set aside, that you have forgotten about, that has seemed impossible, that has seemed like the world is too heavy. Now you have the strength and the motivation to make that move, to make that decision, and in the process to integrate something about yourself that no longer leaves you with any vestige of a feeling that you are living half a life here and half a life there, but rather that you are living one life, one integrated experience of existence. Okay, I'm going to pause on that note and perhaps pick up with another facet of this idea about an integrated experience of existence. You're listening, by the way, to 23 Degrees, one of my favorite, I don't really know what to call them. It's kind of trancy and ambient. It's ambient in the spirit of one of the founders of ambient, Brian Eno. Really, I think he would love this. They're British, I'm sure he's heard it, but it's really one of my favorites of all time. Someone left me with this CD many years ago when I was living in Miami, and it's almost like I can hear the music without ever even having to play it. But for you, I'll play some of it, and I'll be back with you in a digital instant.